John of the Cross again. And I just point out to you the imagery, if you want to spend some time just with the imagery of that, the love that is there. And sometimes we can be so ashamed of using language like that and feel so embarrassed. But to the person in love, that's normal language. And maybe, if I find it embarrassing to use language like that, maybe I don't love enough. And there's all that idea of being pulled out of myself, leaving my house being all still. It's like an elopement, going out in secret. So the psalm speaks about God as a lover, luring us with tenderness into giving everything of ourselves. And I, the soul, decide one day, one dark night, to risk everything for God. And that's how John of the Cross puts it. He describes a relation between God and us as the love between the bride and the bridegroom. And because he was writing to Carmelite sisters, Jesus is the bridegroom and the soul is the bride. But many of us would have that same imagery, because God is not exclusively male. And so I ask at this time, this afternoon, what happens if I should decide, like the soul in this psalm, if I should decide to go out, to go and risk meeting God, to continue the reflection from this morning? What would happen if I did say to God, all right, here's everything, I'm taking the jump? What happens? And I believe we see some of it in that reading that you have on the page from Mark's Gospel. Jesus walking by the Lake of Galilee, he saw Simon and Simon's brother Andrew casting a net in the lake, for they were fishermen. And Jesus said to them, come after me, and I will make you fishers of people. And at once they left their nets and followed him. Jesus sees Simon. And I'd like to keep that verb as the center of our reflection this afternoon. To see someone. André de Lubac, I think it was, who said, a person is enlightened not with a new idea, but when one looks into his or her soul. I had an extraordinary experience at the end of last year. I was in India. I was up in Shillong. And it was November the 14th. I remember the date. In India, it's Children's Day. And one of our novices was working in the center. We have a center for handicapped people, disabled. And because it was Children's Day, he invited them over. But like so many of us, when we were novices, he never told anyone else that he was inviting them. So it happened that I was down in the juvenile, which was next to our novitiate, and the postulants had invited me for tea. So I was sitting down with the tea, and next thing there was a knocking on the door, and this army trooped in, all these young people. And the young postulants knew them. So they came up and started shaking hands and trying to make themselves say good afternoon in whatever sign language or gestures or anything. One eye on the table to see what was there, and the other on us. And they sort of formed a line and they came along, and I started shaking hands with each of them and doing the appropriate thing. All of a sudden, I saw this girl. Now, most of them were not able to speak. But this girl came along, Naga girl. She must have been about 12. And she was looking straight ahead, so I guessed that she could see. So as she passed me, I put out my hand like that. And she bumped into my hand and stopped. And then she turned around to me and put out her hand and looked straight into my eyes and gave me the most gorgeous smile that I've ever, ever seen. And she said, "Good evening, brother." But the way she said it, and the way she looked, I could swear that she was looking straight into me. And the thought flashed into my head, who's blind? I felt an extraordinary surge of recognition. When she used the word brother, how she knew it was a brother? How did she know where to look? She looked straight up where I was. And her use and the inflection of her voice when she used the term brother, it gave me a whole new dimension of what being brother was. And I felt so proud that I was a brother to her and to people like her. And then the confident way in which she held my hand, absolute trust. And I knew at that moment what it was to be a brother. She looked into my soul, and I got an idea of the nature of my call in a way that I had never had it before. And so when someone says, "You're enlightened when someone looks into you," I know what it means. I know in the flesh and blood of my body what it means. It's not an intellectual idea. I was enlightened that day. Jesus sees these two brothers, and then he calls them. What is it to live in the awareness of being constantly in God's eyes? Aware of the providential presence of the Father in his life. Edmund Rice was moved by the Holy Spirit. Aware of the providential presence of the Father in his life. There's something there. That's the mystic. That's the person whose journey is fully under the gaze of God, consciously under the gaze of God. What a gift. Am I aware of the gaze of God? John of the Cross has another lovely image. Remember the image this morning of the room, the dark room? But he has another one now. And he says, can you picture yourself sitting in a park? You're surrounded by this peace and the quiet. And you take out a pad and you begin to write, jot down a few notes. You're writing something and you're quite engrossed in what you're doing. When all of a sudden, you become aware out of the corner of your eye that someone is around watching you. And when you look, you see, yes, someone is standing there. And you go off, and the next day you come back again and sit down there, and that person is again watching you. And you become conscious then that you're an object of interest to someone else. And when that deepens, that you are a factor in someone's life and someone's heart. You have become a factor, something important in someone's life and someone's heart. That's what God's gaze does. It makes us feel noticed, gives us a dignity, allows us to feel, I am someone. And the Christian Brothers in Education try to do that. To make people feel noticed. It's an extraordinary thing. I read somewhere that God's gaze, when God looks at us, that gaze of God cleanses us, it makes us beautiful, it enriches us, and enlightens us. Four things: cleanses, beautifies, enriches, enlightens. And let me tell you, it's no different from the gaze of a lover. Because when God looks at me, and I'm aware of God's looking at me and God's loving me, then I'm also aware that I'm of worth. My sins do not matter to God. I'm embarrassed by them, not to God. And after a while, if I allow God's love to wash over me, then I begin to see the good aspects of my life. So I'm cleansed. I'm cleansed of that guilt. A boy and a girl. The boy loves the girl. The girl feels good. She feels beautiful. Self-worth does that to us. We feel good. And if we feel good, we look good. It enriches us. It gives us a whole new dimension to our lives. It enlightens us. We understand what love is. We understand something about ourselves that we never knew before. Sit in the gaze of God. Sit down, even in your own room, just quietly with eyes closed and hands out, and feel God's loving gaze. And know in yourself that that gaze is transforming you, because love changes us. So Jesus comes along to these two. And he looks at them and he calls them. See, the look and love are very close. Jesus looked at him and loved him. The rich young man. He looked at him and loved him. So the look and the love are very closely linked. He likes what he sees and he calls them. And as I think I mentioned once before, it's a strange mission he offers them. I'm going to make you fishers of people. And we remember that to catch fish and take them out of the water is not to save them. In other words, Jesus is saying to the two lads, I'm inviting you to turn people's lives upside down. That's what I'm inviting you to do. If you're going to be my disciple, you're going to change values. There's going to be a whole reversal of values. You're going to turn people's lives upside down. How many lives have I turned upside down? In the gospel sense, not in the other sense. If that is the measure of discipleship, or have I always been a nice, fuzzy, comfortable person to be with? Don't trouble the waters. Or have we got people to think, to feel uncomfortable about their way of living, by the way I live? And that's what Jesus is calling them to. The looking at people, loving people, is always to call them out of themselves to something different. And so if I am ready to say to God, take everything, I know God looks at me, loves me, will that love of God will change my soul. Not going to happen overnight, but I've got to sit with that love and allow that love to a chance to change me. And it's going to change me in this way. It's going to help me to bring about a new way of living. Karamkirti always said that to us. Jesus came to tell people that life could be lived differently, that human relations could be different, that life's aims need not be those that society advocated. And these two leave their nets and follow Jesus. Brothers, life will remain dispersed, it'll be scattered, unless we bring God to the center. And that bringing God to the center means that I'm aware all the time that God is active in my life. And it's a habit and it's a practice constantly to move aside and allow God and allow God's presence to be noticed. See, silence is not keeping quiet. That helps. Silence is something inside. So that I can be in a crowd of people and I can be talking, but there's a silence inside. That's the best way I can explain it. I keep my center. I hold that center. And when we speak about being silent, it's because during a retreat, it's to develop that interior silence there. Are you aware that God is around? Are you aware that God is within you? That God is calling out to you? It's to develop that idea. You see, because otherwise you have moments of prayer, then you can say we don't need silence after moments of prayer. But we do, because God is not limited to the moments of prayer. God might speak to us at any time during these days. And we are here specifically to listen for God. And watch the word listen for God, not listen to God. Listening to is when someone is talking, as you are doing to me now, hopefully. Listening for is, I'm not sure if he's saying anything, but my antennae are up. And I'm ready. In case he said something, I picked it up. That's listening for. And listening for is also, the word for is also on behalf of. I act for someone. I act on behalf of someone. So we are listening on behalf of God to what our brothers and sisters are saying to us. How is that a constant in my life? Not just during these days. But if I don't develop it now, the chances are I won't be able to develop it later on, when my life is much busier. And so, I again want to say to you brothers, as I say to myself, constantly repeating to myself, this call didn't happen 50 years ago. It's happening today. God didn't look at me 50 years ago and then close God's eyes. God is looking at me now. Am I conscious of that? It's not something that happened. It's something now, it's happening. What is God calling me to today? What is God inviting me to? That is why I'm a religious brother. No matter how young or how old I am, I will always be a religious brother. I cannot retire from this. I can retire from a particular ministry that I do, but not from the core of this. This is who I am, a listener for God, on behalf of God. So as you go off in your prayer, and if you have half an hour just for your own personal prayer, there's some questions that you might like to look at. You might just like to stay with the bit. That picture there is called insight. Koda calls it insight. It's looking down into a deep well. Are you looking down deep enough? God is in the depths of our souls, in the depths of who we are. Can we see God's reflection there? So you might want to stay with the questions on that page. You might want to stay with the passage. But whatever you do, be aware as you're praying and as you're silent of what you're feeling, what's happening inside you. And can you leave yourself open to what God is doing?